This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me is Darius Thomas.
All right, I think I'm ready.
Gary Pochesny grew up in South Bend and got a start during the early days of live streaming. He now oversees creative and communications at North Carolina. We pick his brain about what it takes to get hired and why there's such a wide range of salaries across college athletics.
Let me know what time you want to. I tried to change some settings, so hopefully my feed doesn't freeze today, but we'll see.
We'll see. It says that I'm a second ahead of you, so.
All right. Well, we'll see how it goes. We haven't had much good luck lately, so.
Let's go 03. Perfect. That was on my end.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Today, we have Gary Pochesny, the Assistant Athletic Director for Creative Services and Communications at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Welcome to the show, Gary, and thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me, Justin, Darius.
Can you give us a little background on how you got into sports and where you started?
I think I grew up always around sports. Sports was always kind of in my life. And, you know, early on, I knew I wanted to do something in sports. Being from South Bend, I was fortunate enough to spend some time, even as a high school student, over in the communications office at Notre Dame, and really figured out that's what I wanted to do early on. And so spent some time at Holy Cross College right there, and then graduated from Valpo in Northern Indiana. And then following graduation, I spent a year in Phoenix, Arizona. I worked at the Fiesta Bowl in more of a PR role. When that time was over, I came back to South Bend, where my family is and I'm from, and spent some time just around the athletic department, kind of just poking my head, looking for a job. And at the time, creative video was really coming to the forefront, 2007. More of it was streaming games and those kind of things. And Alan Wasileski and Jack Nolan had just kind of started this UND.com streaming video kind of stuff. And so I came on board to help them stream, you know, lacrosses and baseballs and softball and all those events. And, you know, that was kind of as a part of the Notre Dame Sports Properties fold at that time. And that's kind of when I jumped into creative video, as we realized that we could do more than just stream hockey games and other things. We realized that we had an opportunity to really create some cool content. And Alan and Jack and myself are really the first ones to kind of do it. You know, when you look at what Notre Dame has now, there was three of us in a office space off the visiting team locker room in Notre Dame Stadium. And that's just kind of where it got started.
Yeah, that's awesome. The streaming in 2007 was much different than it is today. When you walk in and you hit a button to go live, even on your phone, right? So can you give us a little bit of background on some of the challenges that you faced back then and maybe how that's applied to what you do today or a philosophy that you have in content today?
Yeah, you know, some of it was like you had to obtain static IP addresses on campus, you know, so working with campus IT, you know, the TriCaster, we were using these little devices that were taking Cat 6 cable to S video so we could get cameras at, you know, 400 or 500 feet away versus an RCA cable. You know, we had to really think outside the box when we were doing stuff at that time. And I think that's something that is I've kind of taken with me in my career is just, hey, what can we do differently? Hey, what makes sense for this event might not make sense for that event, or what can we do with the technology that we have at hand? You know, maybe it's putting I'm talking with our live event team, you know, what they're doing, and how can we integrate some of our creative video assets? You know, like we deploy a wireless gimbal now with a DSLR camera. That's something that, you know, we hadn't always done here at Carolina, you know, or now we're being able to record a Marshall feed back here as an independent source that we can use for a different project. So again, those challenges that we face in 2007, we've really tried to use those as jumping off points of, hey, what technology is out there? You know, that was something that Alan and I always looked at back in the, you know, the, that early stages of like, hey, what technology can we purchase that's going to help save us an hour or 5 hours or, you know, maybe an entire setup. So we always try to, you know, think through things a little bit differently.
So you mentioned North Carolina there. Can you explain the reasons why you left your hometown in Notre Dame to come to North Carolina and what you do there today?
Yeah, so I left Notre Dame. I had a great opportunity with our relationship with NBC Sports to go freelance for them. You know, I had spent 7 years at Notre Dame and really felt I was looking kind of for a new challenge at that point in my life. And, you know, with Rob Hyland and all of those guys at NBC, they gave me an opportunity to go work on the hockey side of things. So I was doing various roles for them on their college hockey package for NBC Sports, and did a few NHL games, lucky enough to do some playoff games in there for them, and really enjoyed that year. And then I realized I missed college athletics. I missed those relationships and those events. And so was looking for a new opportunity of kind of the startup mentality. And I actually spent, before I came to Carolina, I spent 5 years at the University of Memphis in Memphis, Tennessee, and really helped them build out their creative and their live event side of things. And really liked that, but I knew I wanted to get back to a bigger school at some point in my career and find a way to kind of move up the administrative chain, and found that opportunity here at Carolina in 2019 and came here to oversee the creative services department and really help take them to the next level. When I got here, creative was part of the Go Heels brand. And so we broke that out to make it its own kind of separate entity and separate budgets and those kind of things. So really been fortunate enough to build our team out here at Carolina.
So we've all seen the evolution of video and from streaming television to all the post-production and now social media takeover. Back in the, you know, mid-2000s when you were coming up in the industry with all the streaming, who were you looking to around the country, or who are you talking to find the best approaches to streaming at the time?
Yeah, I think we were talking with anybody that would pick up the phone or email. You know, I remember emailing Kelly Mosier at Nebraska when he had first started there. I remember there was it was Texas A&M, and somebody had played a basketball game that didn't air on TV. And then they basically took the video board feed and recreated a TV broadcast. And I remember like calling them and asking them how they did it, you know, just like, what were you guys doing? You know, Baylor at the time, I remember having discussions with them, like, how are you integrating scoreboard data into your TriCaster? You know, like it was those kind of questions. We would watch other schools or, you know, get other tips. I don't even know if Twitter was a thing even at that point. You know, we would just follow what we could and like see things on, you know, on YouTube or other places. And I was one that, and I'm still not shy to pick up the phone and call someone and say, hey, how did you do this? I have questions. You know, what did you guys do? What technologies out there? What were you guys using? Because I would just like to try to replicate it at some point.
And you have a lot more people that are coming into the industry now as post-production. Are you still seeing an increase of people on the live production side as well, or is it about even?
Yeah, I would say it's probably about even. You know, we're seeing a little bit of a mix of those individuals, I would say. You know, like we have a young guy that works for us now that he does a lot of post-production for us, but he does a lot of live events for the local minor league baseball team. So I think we get a little bit of both worlds. We have some folks that, you know, really can dabble in a little bit of all areas and, you know, really can find their stride.
And what would you say is the difference between some of the students and young professionals that you get a chance to hire and work with now and young Gary, who was just getting into the industry some years ago?
They are way more talented than I will ever be. I think that's the crazy thing is so much of it was dropped on us. I remember, you know, we got a palette shipped to us of like computers and cameras and equipment. And like, I remember Alan and I sitting in this windowless room for a couple of days, like, how do we turn this stuff on? Let alone like these kids can come in now and they're running After Effects and, hey, I want to make this move. And it takes them no time to either learn it or they're hop on a master class and they figure out what they're doing. You know, I think that the resources that are available for young creatives is infinitely larger than we ever had. You know, so much of the stuff that we had to procure was based on what we needed to survive. You know, like, where could we buy mini DV tapes the cheapest? Whereas, like, now everybody's carrying around, you know, 2 terabyte hard drives in their back pockets.
Yeah, I just bought a 4 terabyte one that is like less than the size of my hand.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, and it's cheaper too than the 1 terabyte like gigantic blocks, bricks, whatever you want to call it that we had. So, can you give us a little bit of an overview of what you oversee and how many different full timers you have versus students, and how your department is run to facilitate some of these sports and make sure there's enough coverage and working with different teams?
Yeah, so I oversee two distinctly different departments, so our creative services department and our athletic communications department, which is our traditional media relations folks. And then on the creative side, we have, you know, our website, our social media, graphic design, and our creative video. And so we've structured it based a little bit on our sports, on our needs. You know, we have 28 sports here at Carolina. And so what we've really done is we've staffed it to where we have a full-time videographer assigned to certain teams. And then we kind of backfill those responsibilities with some of our students. So, you know, we kind of just do as, you know, what the demand is based on a home weekend. And then we have a few sports that we travel folks to road games for. We don't travel every team, every road game. We just don't have that manpower and that capacity. It's something that we would definitely like to do in the future, but it's just not necessarily in the cards right now. But, you know, we have, I think I have 7 full-time videographers that are out covering events on a weekly basis.
And with that being said, it used to be kind of frowned upon by coaches and some, you know, sport administrators if you sent a student to cover something. And like you said, students now and the young professionals coming out of college are way more talented, way more resources, but also they have the talent. But are you having that same pushback from coaches that students are covering them versus a full-timer, or are they okay with it as long as the product is there?
I'm not sure some of our coaches would know the difference, to be honest, with the quality that we're able to put out. You know, one example, our primary videographer for football couldn't go on a road trip this year. So I went on the road trip to App State and we took 4 students with us. They were the ones shooting the entire game. I was back editing and logging footage, but our 4 students had the entire field covered for our victory against App State. And so, you know, if you go back and look at all that footage, you know, they're so talented that they, you know, I don't think anybody missed a beat that week.
You talked about logging footage. You know, not everybody has that, you know, capability to be able to, you know, not focus on a game and have a staff that can properly do that and archive. How important is that for you as a department to be able to log that footage, whether it's right there during the game or short term after?
It's absolutely vital to our long-term success. You know, that's one of the things that we preach to people is, while it might slow you down initially, or you have to go back and do it after your edit's done, it's vital to what we need in the long-term success of this department. You know, being able to go back and pull footage that we've had from 30 or 40 years ago that somebody had the forethought to log, even when they pulled it from tape, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, has saved our bacon a few times. And, you know, it's something that we continue to preach to folks. And especially as we are in the midst of moving all of our content over to CatDV to have that resource so we can go and find footage a lot faster and use some yellow and offline storage. It's vital to our long-term success.
I also imagine that your connections with the IT team that you developed starting at Notre Dame and having to understand those static IPs probably is paying off a little bit in that transition. Can you talk a little bit about what went into
making that decision and how you had to work with the IT department to pull it off, and how will you have to continue to work with them in order to make that a reality?
Yeah, we talk to our IT guys. I probably talk to them daily, and just to say, hey, more than anything, but it's also, you know, hey, we have a lot of staff. You know, I have, I think, totality 21 staff members. Somebody always needs a computer fixed or something done. So it's like, I really want to have a great relationship with those guys. Yeah, working with IT, they've been great. You know, they have a lot of connections on campus. So all of our servers are stored up on main campus. So they're not even housed in our building. So it makes life, you know, they've worked with them in order to have that space and have it all up there in a redundant power, power safe environment up on campus. So it's really helped us, because for us, it's just a network feed. You know, we're used to that. All of our servers currently operate that way. So it was a great solution to what we needed to do. You know, they've been great about helping us move footage, and they can use the processes that campus has to take footage from, you know, our day to day, what we call the V drive or the video drive, over to the CAD TV server and really get stuff archived for us.
So you oversee, like you said, both of those departments, communications and the creative side of things. How are you ensuring, I know that you just talked about the CAD TV setup, how are you ensuring that you're getting the proper things that you need setup wise for not only the creative, but the communications folks who are using some of that stuff too? Or are they using any of that footage and graphics and all of that?
Yeah, so we kind of utilize what we call a current school year system. So anybody that's currently playing, we keep their 4 years in active storage. So we have all that, you know, currently as quick grab on the active V drive. And then as school years roll off, and we'll probably get a little shift here due to the COVID fifth or sixth years, we try to start moving that footage after 5 years off into the Black Pearl storage that we have with CAT UV. So anybody that works here in our office has access to that current active storage. They can go in and, you know, pull stuff for GIFs or clips or for social, because we really want our communicators also to be content creators. They work around our teams. They're around them as much as, you know, our videographers are, if not twice as much. So we really want them to be able to have the resources necessary in order to, hey, I need to pull this clip from this game. You know, we have them, they have a full Adobe license. They can go in and drop something in. We do like mini classes of teaching them, hey, this is how you clip a, you know, basically here's an in and an out and an export. Here's how you get that clip back to what you need so you can get it up on social media. We give them all the tools that they need in order to make those things happen.
And for, you know, to shift it kind of to social in the new age, what settings are you for exports? Because I'm sure a lot of people have this issue with Twitter and Instagram kind of downsizing and down converting footage. What have you found success? What settings have you found success with?
I feel like that's like the great unknown that we fluctuate with, you know, because we'll kick things out in 4K. We'll kick things out in 1080. We'll kick things out in 720 or different, you know, obviously different, you know, frame speed. And it's just like, oh, this worked well today. And then the 2 days later, we're like, what? I kicked the same thing out, the same video clip in a different frame rate or a different size, and it doesn't work. And you're just like, what happened? You know, I think we try to keep tabs on that. We used to do it all, you know, 23.995, and then, you know, we were just, okay, that worked. And then it was like 59.96, and it was, this works and this doesn't work. And so I think we try to keep tabs on it more than anything. Our director of social media does a really good job with keeping us all honest on those things. He's constantly monitoring that. As he's posting stuff, he's saying, hey, that didn't look great. Can we take a look at that setting of what you did there? You know, the same goes with the frames, the frame size. If it's, 4x5 or 16x9, and he's keeping us honest with that. One thing we've made a major push is, regardless of the platform, we kick out a 16x9 version for ourselves, and we post that to our website now. So no matter what happens, if Twitter doesn't exist in a year or if Instagram changes things. We still have that 16:9 original completed media. We also have it on our website, so we can embed that, you know, directly into stories and use it for other things.
How many people that you talk to, because that's a great point. The focus has shifted for many to social media only or social media first. How many people that you talk to around the country, colleagues, are having that same approach where they are actually finding the importance of keeping 16:9 and being able to also satisfy the social requirements?
Probably not as many as I thought, because I feel like a lot of creators are social creators now and doing, you know, they didn't come from that you had to put it up in 16:9 world, or it's not going to go on your website. It's not going to, like, I remember the days of websites when you would upload stuff. If it wasn't 16:9, it wasn't going to play out. And so I think I would say, I don't want to call it a lost art, but that's what I kind of feel like. And something that we've preached is that if we have that 16:9, 1080 or 720 cut, we can use that on a lot of things in the future. We go back and we look at things all the time. We're like, hey, we have this. How can we utilize that? Versus if it was a square thing, I don't know if we would have pulled the video clips and used them, because, you know, we have, you know, unique video boards here at Carolina. We have a lot of really wide video boards. So, like, you start to get into the square aspect ratio and you're like, okay, that's not going to work on that. So, you know, or we can't use it for archiving. So that's been something that we've really tried to push with our staff is, hey, edit in a 16:9 world and then make your final crop and the export. So that way we have a 16:9 version edited, and then you can do your final crop, you know, 4:5 or another aspect ratio that you need for social.
Yeah, that's interesting. Cause that's that was partly why I was asking about IT too, because I feel like there's a lot of content capture that's focused solely for social media. And it always blew my mind that we weren't also preserving some of that social media content. Like, that could be just as valuable down the line as some of the other stuff you're capturing with a camera, regardless of what you're capturing it on too. It's all like preservation and making sure that you have access to a shot of something for a story down the line. As far as like NIL and how that has maybe changed or shaped what you've seen, can you give us a little bit of background on how that has impacted your team? And maybe since you have seen it from a communication side and from a video side, does that help at all?
Yeah, I think NIL has changed a little bit, but it's not necessarily changed what we're able to kick out. We're, you know, currently not creating content for our student athletes for NIL purposes. Well, we create content and provide it to them on an influencer to build their social brand, but nothing that's branded or sold for NIL purposes. The hardest part sometimes is knowing what is just kind of going on, because the way those deals are structured, we don't know when a student athlete signs a deal, you know? So it's like, okay, is this, you know, what are the policies for social media for us to like or retweet? We've created some internal policies for that, but, you know, we try to be a little bit hands-off on the NIL space.
How are your students responding or asking for things? Are they, because you just mentioned, like, if it's UNC branded, they can have it. But if it's not, if it's another company or a lifestyle shoot, or do they have enough resources around Chapel Hill and in the Triangle area? Or, like, how are they adjusting to the NIL influence?
Yeah, I think a lot of them have found pathways forward, you know, to students on campus utilizing our journalism school or other means to try to find content creators that'll help them, you know, create those things that they need for their NIL.
All right. We can make the shift that we've been waiting a long time to have this conversation about hiring. You know, a lot of times we have content creators who are like active content creators day in, day out. But we don't get a chance too often to talk to people who make the actual hiring decisions. Where did you get kind of your playbook in your head of hiring from, and how did you kind of come up with that?
You know, I think the one thing that I look for is energy, you know, from individuals. You know, I think a lot of people that apply for jobs and opportunities, they have the skill set. You know, I think right away you can figure out the individuals that are going to be able to do the job, but it's in who's a good fit for our team. And so much of that is where we kind of rely on those, you know, interactions with individuals. It's phone calls, it's Zooms, it's some on-campus meetings. And I think that's something that, you know, when we look at it, obviously the skill set is super important, but it's also like, how's this person going to work with all the other pieces that we currently have in our department and in our building? So we have a giant, if I look out from my office, it's a giant cube farm. From our Go Heels Productions and ACC Network folks to creative folks to communications folks. And so like we're all around each other. So it's, again, making sure that we get somebody with a personality fit that's going to fit our entire building. So that's something I look for. You know, I want somebody that understands what the job is, not just how much fun it is to work at Notre Dame or Memphis or North Carolina. I want someone that understands that, hey, these jobs are sometimes grueling. You know, we work in athletics. It's also a lot of fun. We get to do some pretty cool things, but understand that sometimes there are days that you're going to just wait around chasing raindrops for a baseball game. Or there's days that it's going to be blazing hot and that we just kind of have to grind through it. We also, I preach work-life balance. In my first few years at Notre Dame, I was terrible at work-life balance. I would go weeks without taking a day off, or, you know, there was 2.5 really people that were doing this with Jack kind of calling radio games and helping us do broadcast stuff. And, you know, I just didn't do a good job of that. And so that's something that I always have preached to people is take vacation. Don't feel guilty about it. Make sure you get away. Like, we try to plan ahead. And typically on the whiteboard behind me, so I have a giant whiteboard in my office. And so like, I write on the whole wall, and I'd take, hey, this person's going to be out these days. You know, so I try to keep track of where people are at, if they're on the road. And I really try to make sure that everyone has some work-life balance, or, you know, we work strange hours. Like, I don't expect our staff to be here at 8 o'clock in the morning because they're going to stay here till 9 or 10 o'clock at night. So those are things that I've really tried to preach to people, especially as we're hiring folks, that, hey, this is a weird area. I want to make sure you're going to enjoy it, but also trying to find something that's really going to fit our team.
You know, a lot of talk is about diversity, inclusion, not only as it pertains to race and gender and all that. How important is it to get a team of diverse thinking people to expand what you're trying to accomplish as a department?
I think it's huge. I mean, if you have a bunch of like-minded thinkers, you're going to get a lot of like-minded content. I always try to play devil's advocate with our staff of like, hey, they have an idea. And I'm like, okay, well, what if we did it this way? What does that mean? What does that change? Is there a better way to do this? You know, that stuff that I've always tried to think about is like, hey, how can we come up with something different, or what's a different way to do it? You know, we cover an event, and I always challenge our staff of like, and they're like, I got to go cover this baseball game. It's the third one this week. I said, all right, how are we going to do it differently? What'd you do the last 2 days? What can we do today? So again, trying to get people just to think a little bit differently, that it doesn't have to be done the same way that we did it the year before or the game before. I try to challenge folks to cover things in a new light. I also, on different things, I'll send different people, or maybe people that aren't necessarily used to covering an event like that. You know, it might be a special event where I will send somebody that is much more socially driven to cover that versus our feature editor or videographer out there. So like, to get a different perspective on things, hey, what did you come up with that is maybe different, or shot something a little differently? And I try to look at everyone's footage. I don't know, get to go through it all, but I try to, you know, like randomly select some clips and look at things and say, hey, maybe for our next game, we do this or that, trying to get people to think a little differently.
So with that being said, it's almost like the industry is kind of oversaturated with talent. And so you'll probably get a lot of, well, kind of a couple questions. Are you getting a lot of traction when you post a job, or are you struggling to fill positions sometimes when you post them out? Salaries aside, just interest from there being a lot more people who are actually in the industry.
Yeah, these days. I think initially coming when we returned following COVID, we struggled to fill some positions or get people in that I thought where we should have maybe been. We got some talented individuals, but I don't necessarily the quantity that we normally would get. I didn't see. We recently completed a search for a position, and I felt like our talent pool was probably as strong, if not stronger, than any I've had in my time here at Carolina. So I definitely think that, you know, people are looking and trying to see what's available to them, kind of in this post-pandemic world that we live in now. And I think people are really starting to think about other opportunities. And I think that that's great for institutions or places that are looking for qualified talent, because there's a lot of talent out there. You know, those opportunities to go and talk with people, there's a lot of opportunity out there.
All right. So you, a couple of months ago, or maybe 6 months or so ago, were in the sports creative community and posted a job and posted it on Twitter and some other places. And there was some conversation around it.
Yeah.
Probably unfair to you and your team, but we wanted to talk about it for some time now.
Yeah.
But it was surrounding salary requirements for positions.
Mm-hmm.
How much blowback have you seen, not only just for the positions that you posted, but just globally around the country about salary requirements and salary matching job expectation?
I think it's so hard. And again, I sit in this seat as a leader of our group and a leader, someone that's been in the creative space for a long time. And I think it's, you always have to look at time and place and location and consider all those things, because if you look at multiple jobs that are posted in the last few days, you know, you're going to see a wide variety of salaries and a wide variety of qualifications. They're so vastly different. And, you know, from what we experienced in that situation, I probably learned a little bit of what to do and not do. But it's also, some of that is we're bound by the red tape of human resources and the institution we work for. You know, there's certain things that they tell me that I can do, and I wasn't, you know, able to respond at that time. And I think that's something that people have to understand. You know, what schools hire, you know, I can only speak of the places that I've worked, but, you know, what's available to folks in South Bend, Indiana might be different than Chapel Hill or Memphis. You know, the cost of living in all those three cities is vastly different, you know, and it's something that we have to consider. You know, we understand that, you know, not every job is going to be right for everyone. I would love to pay people, you know, a lot of money to do these jobs, but I don't control the budget, you know, other than what I can control. And we fight, you know, daily to make sure that our staff is compensated. You know, we try to do what we can for them. And you know, I understand that everyone wants good for creatives. And I think, you know, there's a way for folks to go out and make money outside of college athletics. But I also think this is a great spot for people to continue to find themselves and really do cool content.
And there's been a lot of change, and obviously it's gotten better. I remember transparently speaking when I first started in this industry, my first full-time job was $25,000 out of college. In today's society, it's probably close to 40, sometimes 50, straight out of college. And I love that for the creatives, right? Is there a solution, and how do we get there to balance it out? Because some of these positions, you'll have somebody, you know, increasing or elevating the title that they're ended up giving to a employee just to get them to a comparable amount. So you'll have smaller schools that may hire you as a creative director, but you're just out of school and haven't managed anyone. You haven't. So kind of talk about that.
Yeah, that's something that we've tried really hard here to do at Carolina, is just to right size our salaries and kind of make all of our titles kind of match that area. So when folks, if they were to leave here or if they're coming from another school, we're trying to be as comparable to those other institutions as possible. Now, it's not a one for one apples to apples comparison, but it at least gives people that opportunity that you come for this. You're coming for a step up. This is what you're going to get. This is the opportunity we have for you as a, you know, maybe a director at this salary range. I think some of it is the creative sports world doesn't have an advocacy group outside of this Slack group, really, and this podcast. You know, when you look at the totality of NACTA and SVG, there's a little bit, but like there's no group. There's no executive director of this group that's advocating to athletic directors and to people in that world. And that's something that, you know, there's a COSIDA for media relations or sports college communicators that's available, but it doesn't necessarily fit all the creative worlds yet. And so I think that's something that is difficult, is there's not this advocacy group that's going to go and talk at NACTA or to other groups and say, hey, we need more for creatives. I think that's something that could help change maybe some of the culture and thinking a little bit. But again, I think it's a little onus is on each school. You're always going to have places that are going to undercut others to try to get someone hired or try to give people great salaries. But in the end, I think the schools have to do what's right in order to try to maximize their resources and their throughput on creatives.
So I feel like there's also this other conversation of, well, pro sports is the pinnacle and it pays more. So I figured I'd throw this out there. I just went on the cost of living calculator and I typed in my salary in Boston when I was the director, right, of the video production team. And my salary in Chapel Hill would have been $56,000. Now, Darius, you said coming out of school, kids are making 40 or 50. That's as a director level, like I'm overseeing a department in pro sports. That's not that different, right? Than
right.
Entry level. So I feel like there's also this, Gary mentioned, it depends on where you are and all these different circumstances, the benefits package, which I know people don't care about as much when you're younger, but when you have a family like we do, it matters a lot more, right? So I think there's just a lot of different variables that don't get as much consideration as they need to as well.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, vital. You know, a dollar in South Bend is a different than a dollar in Chicago. And, you know, I think those are the things that people don't necessarily consider when they're looking at jobs. And again, you know, when I moved to Memphis, I made more money at that time than I was making in South Bend. But it was like, okay, what is my rent? What is that cost differential? You know, what does that look like? You know, those are things that I had to consider when I was looking at that opportunity or how do you, you know, calculate all those things? So, I think it's so different everywhere you go that you can start to look at, hey, there's this opening at this school and they're only offering this, but you don't necessarily know what comes with that job and that opportunity.
And the last piece of that is people look at budgets and budget numbers and what the networks are giving the schools, and they're not looking at all the factors, or they're looking at what a coach makes. And they're like, I know that they can afford more than $40,000. Well, $40,000 isn't the budget number, right? So you have the actual salary, you have taxes, you have benefits, you have the amount that it costs to post that job, you have the amount that it costs to actually fly you in, put you in a hotel, and you may have three or four people that you bring in. So kind of talk about how much it takes to actually get a person hired and the actual budget number that that matches versus the salary itself.
Yeah. So if you look at somebody's salary of $40,000, it costs us roughly $60,000 with, you know, insurance and benefits and all those things. And that's just, that's per year, you know? So all of those other things that go into, you know, having someone on your staff, you know, so that's, you know, you're like, oh, okay, it's a $40,000 budget hit. It's actually closer to 60 when you factor in all those benefits. And some of that is, you know, obviously some apparel, and various other things that get calculated into that. You know, and in hiring someone, I bet you you're, if we're bringing people in, we're probably in the $2,000 to $3,000 range. By the time you start calculating flights and hotels and, if we're paying for mileage or other things of, you know, taking them out to dinner, you know, that's the cost of me sending some of my staff to a convention. So those are things that as we're considering is do we bring people in for visits, or do we, you know, try to budget those dollars for a professional development of our staff, you know, as we look holistically at our budget. You know, hiring people is not cheap. And then there's also the time factor of staff that, you know, is going to take part in these interviews. You know, there's hours out of our day that they're going to meet with these individuals and talk with them that, you know, Mike, doesn't get calculated into that total hiring cost.
And moving expenses if they're moving.
Yeah, which is a whole nother world. Like for us here at Carolina, we have very strict state rules that what we can pay for and can't pay for and moving costs and who can get it. You know, those are things that I think some people don't understand. It's just all that state red tape that we face as a state institution, of things that we have to do or we can't pay for. You know, like we very rarely pay for moving expenses, and that's a state legislature passed thing that we can't do. So, you know, sometimes we have folks that ask for it and we're just like, unfortunately, due to state regulations, we can't pay for that.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think we all forget that these colleges often are, you know, legislated by the state and which you live in and that you'd be moving to. So definitely a lot of differences. You mentioned a lot about the work-life balance, having a family yourself with young kids. How have you tried to blend what you do at work and make sure that you have home time? And I've also seen some photos of you making sure that there's memories made through your work with your kids too.
Yeah, it's so vital. I know growing up, my dad has, and this started when I was young, my dad worked at the local high school in South Bend. Every Friday night, he did the first down chains for the high school football team. He did it from 1979 through, I think, the last school year, might be his last one. And so he did it for 40 years. And so that's how I spent my Friday nights, was just with him. And so for my two kids, like, I try to get them to as many events as I can throughout the year, you know, taking them to football. My wife is a trooper. She takes them by herself, a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old, to like football games while I'm working and doing other things. And, you know, I think that's a lot of fun. When I go home, I really try to be at home until my kids go to bed. That's something that I've really tried to do, is when I walk in that door, either be 5 or 6 o'clock, when I'm at home with them, I really try to be there for them and play with them and watch TV and, you know, do what I need to do to be a dad. And then when they go to bed, I'll pull off the computer and do what I need to do if I need to finish up things from the day or answer emails or those kind of things. I think that's super important. You know, one of my favorite memories that my 5-year-old doesn't grasp is that, I think he was 3 at the time, but his first Carolina Duke game was with the first time we let fans into the Smith Center following the pandemic. So he was one of 3,000 people to be in the Smith Center to see a Carolina Duke game. And like he doesn't grasp that moment at this time in his life, but, you know, to see my wife up there with him, that was a lot of fun for me.
You talk about that rivalry. How exciting is it, not only in basketball, which probably gets the most of the attention, but in all of the sports that you compete with your in-state rivals?
It's just so different because it's 8 miles down the road. Like, there's great rivalries in all the sports. And, like, you can always get into this debate of, like, this school's rivalry or that school's rivalry. It's just so different because we're so close. Like, half of my staff lives in Durham but works in Chapel Hill. And then there's a lot of their staff that lives in Chapel Hill and works in Durham. And, you know, we see those, you know, we see their creative staff all the time. Like, I see a lot of those guys out and about. You know, we're super friendly to each other, but it's so much fun, you know, just to see it. Like, I don't care if it's football or basketball, women's basketball, soccer. Like, it is just another level of, like, again, there's no way to describe it because it's not like, it's not we hate them or they hate us. It is just like, we want to beat them so bad that it's a lot of fun.
And you also, you know, Duke and Carolina are 8 miles apart, but you also have another school in close proximity. Is it as intense, or is it more of a kind of tapered down approach when NC State is in competition?
I think it's as intense and probably not as talked about as much, because so many people focus on the Carolina-Duke rivalry, and I think that stems from the basketball. And what people have to realize is that rivalry in Carolina-Duke is probably really 30 or 40 years old, you know, really from when Coach K took over at Duke. And, you know, so I think the state rivalry has always been there, but it just doesn't get talked about as much because, again, it's the same thing. Like, you want to beat them so bad, again, because you go to the same dentist as them. You go to the same barbershop. You go to the same grocery stores as state fans. And so it's just like, you want to beat them. Like, you know, you want to be de facto state champs in all your sports.
What advice would you give to young creatives who are seeking to get in this business or who are fairly young in this business of how to kind of keep it in the road or navigate through this industry? As you know, as we know, there's a lot of moving around. There's a lot of changes every day from social media to hiring to, you know, in the last few years, we've probably seen more layoffs in this industry. But what would be your advice to younger creatives?
I think one thing, all right, I probably have about six. When I say one, you know, do something that you love. You know, if this isn't something that you love, find something that makes you happy, because that's super important. You know, I come to work and I'm around these people as much, if not more, than my family. So that would be one thing I would say to them. Try to stand out, you know, in the field. And that doesn't mean you have to do things outlandishly, but how can you do things differently? You know, how can people notice what your work is? You know, try things that maybe people haven't tried, you know. I preach to our staff of, hey, we see things at other places. What can we do can we make that Carolina? Like, Mississippi State did this really, really well, or Florida did this really, really well. How do we make this Carolina and take that concept? And I also would encourage anyone that's looking for jobs or opportunities to look at what's best for you. You know, there's different places around the country, and a lot of them seem like great places or fun places, but find a place that fits what you want to do in your life or your lifestyle or your speed of life. You know, I think that's super important. If you don't like the, you know, the so-called rat race, you know, a place like St. John's might not be a great fit because of New York and those things. But it's, if you like, you know, whatever fits you, find that place. You know, when I looked at Carolina as an opportunity, this was a place of the country that my wife and I had always talked about. If there was an opportunity in this part of the country to come to, and, you know, we kind of had three, maybe four spots that we had talked about. And it was something that, hey, what's going to fit our lifestyle? We want to have a family. We want to, you know, be able to enjoy ourselves outdoors, those kind of things. And so we really looked hard at what those opportunities look like.
Well, Gary, we definitely appreciate you joining the show and giving us some insights into all that you do, especially on the hiring side. I think that is a misunderstood area of this industry. Everyone thinks that you know, there's an abundance of resource, but you know, it's got to come from somewhere. But thank you for sharing your story and your journey, and looking forward to seeing how your team continues to do great work.
Well, I appreciate you guys taking some time and having me on, and I would encourage anyone that's, you know, wants to get into the field or looking to move up to reach out. You know, I'm happy to, I try to talk to as many young people as I can, and you know, I'm always a resource, and that's something that I've really tried to pride myself on and in my career, is being a resource for people. And you know, don't be upset if I, you know, don't respond or other people don't respond, but reach out to people and ask questions. And you know, I think that's the takeaway from a lot of this, is a lot of us didn't know what we were doing when we first got into this role, and we asked a lot of questions. And I would encourage anybody that wants to jump into the world of creative, you know, content to ask questions and try to learn as much as they can and be a sponge.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions, so pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker, and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.